Welcome back to 32 Fans. I'm Alex Chester. With me, as always, is Wheels Wienerker. Wheels, how's it rolling?
It's rolling great. I feel like rolling right along. We're up to team 5 out of 32. Not booking guests was the greatest idea I've ever had.
Yeah. No offense to the guests. They've all been wonderful.
No, I mean, the guests are great. If the guests could just, like, show up. If we said, like, hey, we're recording at noon, can you show up and not make a single audio mistake or have any audio issues, and we could just splice everything together.
Yeah.
I think that would have been fine.
Yeah.
But I think...
The episode that I posted yesterday, which you obviously haven't heard yet, because as we're recording, I just posted it a few minutes ago. Your audio went out for like 12 minutes yesterday.
I don't know what happened. My Audacity didn't catch some of what I was saying.
Your microphone was not interested in the Bengals.
So
I really had to stretch to get to 32 minutes.
Okay. Well, we had to stretch in general. It was we didn't have a lot. I said I had a lot to say about the Bengals, and then I didn't. But today, no one circles the podcast wagons like the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
So hopefully we have something to say. Can I read you some scores from last year?
Yeah.
5, 6, 9. Those are consecutive game scores by the Buffalo Bills.
Ooh.
They lost 37-5 to the Colts, 25-6 to the Patriots, and 41-9 to the Bears. Now, those are three teams.
But they also came into Minnesota as, 18-point underdogs? I think they were, the biggest underdogs since the undefeated Patriots season, and they won that game easily.
Yeah, 27-6, the strangest game in many years.
Yeah.
They got
spoiled by your doppelganger for me.
Who's your doppelganger?
Your doppelganger spoiled it for me, remember?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, the game. But that's the greatest thing he's ever done to somebody.
Yeah, he saved me 3 hours. Yes, correct.
He saved you 3 hours. He told you on a Jewish holiday what the score was after you told him not to.
Yeah.
They opened up the year losing 47-3 in Baltimore. They had 7 double-digit losses. They oddly had 3 double-digit wins, a couple thrashings of the Jets and Dolphins, and also a thrashing of your Minnesota Vikings, as you just mentioned. Let me read you something else, okay? Worst rookie seasons for first-round QBs in the last, 32, 33 years, okay?
The worst?
The worst by DVOA.
Okay.
All right? I'm going to go from pretty bad to worst, and we're going to see where these QBs ended up. All right, Tim Couch.
Mm-hmm.
Not great.
Yeah.
Josh Freeman got much better but ended up really bad.
Yeah.
Christian Ponder.
Yeah.
Josh Allen. That's why we're reading this list.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, okay.
Was also incredibly young, I believe, when he started. I think he was, until Darnold last year, maybe the youngest guy. Ended up being good. Blake Bortles.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely got better, but not good. His doppelganger, Blaine Gabbert.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get much better. Still in the league, right? David Carr. Not Derek Carr. David Carr.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, he got murdered in his rookie season.
Yeah. But so did Tim Couch.
Yeah.
I mean, Tim Couch was also an expansion QB, basically, right? So, Donovan McNabb.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was really bad in 99, as were the other 99 QBs, but he got better. Ryan Leaf.
Ooh.
Josh Rosen.
Okay.
And we ended off with the worst rookie QB of all time, Jared Goff.
Yeah, Jared Goff was so incredibly awful that we were convinced he would never do anything.
Yeah, so it's not hopeless for Josh Allen. But the odds are against him.
Now, this is only as a passer, or this is all around?
I assume DVOA includes...
Because he added a lot of value with his legs.
Well, he took away a lot of value with his arm.
Yeah. But I'm surprised that he was that low. You know, I would not... If I'm a Bills fan, I wouldn't have expectations that he's going to become a star. But I would not be surprised to see him, be a reasonable, 20th to 25th ranked starter for the next handful of years.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible.
And it's not because he's very inaccurate. But again, I think that he can make up for that a little bit.
But he'd have to make up for that a lot.
Well, I'm not talking about him becoming a star. I'm saying, again, I don't think he's going to win playoff games for the Bills. But, there's no reason he can't be a starter for the next half dozen years if he can be. Just, again, he's adding a lot of he's better than he's better than Tim Tebow. He's worse than Cam Newton. I think he's somewhere in between those two guys.
I believe Allen had the longest yards per attempt in terms of target last season. So he throws deep a lot. He's incredibly bad at throwing deep.
Yeah.
He famously has a great arm, though.
Yeah. Well, a powerful arm, but a very inaccurate.
Can you, by the way, can you, since we're actually dropping knowledge and football facts to start this podcast.
Yeah, very off-brand.
There's three wide receivers in the NFL, I'd say over the last 2 years, but pretty consistently, who go deep more than any other receiver. Their average yards per, I'm blanking on what the phrasing would be, but, you know, where the target is, you know, like if you run a 17-yard route,
yeah,
then it's 17
yeah,
yards.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
So who are the three wide receivers in the NFL who go the deepest?
Well, I assume that John Brown is one of them, and that's why you're bringing this up.
Correct, John right. Brown. So that's going to be interesting. Josh Allen, they're going to go deep 10 times a game and catch one of them.
My mind is going blank. The guy on the Ravens who then went to the 49ers who would always get the pass interference calls.
Goodwin?
No, that's not who I meant.
Okay, because Goodwin is a speedy guy who also, in theory, would. Sometimes if you're too much of
Torrey Smith. I was thinking of Torrey Smith.
Okay, yeah, well, he's gone.
Yeah, Ted Ginn, I was thinking of, maybe.
That's a good guess, too, but no. The problem is some guys like Ginn, I think, get a lot of screen passes.
Yeah, all right. So
whereas these guys are more
pure. John Brown and who else?
You're going to kick yourself, I think, for both. DeSean Jackson is an obvious one.
Yeah, well, Ted Ginn and DeSean Jackson are the same person in my head. Yeah.
No, but I think Ginn does go deep very well, yeah, yeah. And he's faster than
those
guys.
That was my next guess, but I just...
And Robbie Anderson.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I think Allen to Brown will be super interesting this year. But again, it will be Brown is good at going deep, but not necessarily good at catching
now,
the ball.
I'm looking at the depth chart. I don't see Calvin Benjamin here.
No, Calvin Benjamin's not in the NFL.
Oh, wow.
Calvin Benjamin sucks. Yeah, wow. He
That de-escalated quickly.
I mean, he never really produced. Everyone hated being in the same room as him. It would be crazy to he made it one extra.
Well,
year,
I wouldn't say he never produced. I mean, he had a good season for Carolina.
Yeah, but
ago.
It just fell off. Like once he started ripping on Cam, that great preseason, you know, video of Cam, you know, basically bullying him. Yeah, Calvin Benjamin. He did very little with a lot of talent.
Yeah. Because I mean, the receivers here, like John Brown, was always in Arizona, a potential guy who never really came through.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say he didn't have the best quarterbacks, but again, I don't think Josh Allen's the best quarterback. So Buffalo, I'm looking at Buffalo's depth chart right now. Their starting running back is LeSean McCoy, and you're like, LeSean McCoy is really, really old. Why is he still a starting quarterback in 2019? To which I respond to you, well, don't worry because his backup is Frank Gore.
It's an old age home.
What are they doing? And then T.J. Yeldon's backing up Gore.
Yeldon's young, but doesn't have it.
Yeldon's got to be at least what 27, 28.
No, this right, only his oh, third
Yeldon's
or fourth
only,
year.
Oh, he's Yeldon's just, turning 26. Okay, wow.
Yeah, he just never produced, so he feels
26
old
is
and
old
he's
for
on his way
back.
Out of the league. All three of those guys probably won't be in the NFL next year.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, what is it? I mean, because, again, Buffalo, if you're a team and, you know, you're winning the Super Bowl and so you're just trying to drag this veteran for one more year, but, like, what is Buffalo doing with their running backs?
Yeah. Well, hold on. So last year they were 6-10, but you take out the Nathan Peterman, Derek Anderson starts, and they're 6-6, and Matt Barkley destroyed the Jets. So, 5-6 for Josh Allen, but they're not. You know, they're well below replacement level starters. Peterman and Anderson are gone. They did get some stuff done. Like it's not as hopeless. Yes, this is. I think this is a fair ranking for them because Josh Allen has such a low ceiling. I think as a passer, like what's gonna even if this team. Does what they did last year, and they have success against the Jets and the Dolphins and the Giants, like the soft part of their schedule. When they play good defense, they're just going to get annihilated, like unless that defense is the Vikings. Like they're going to they just can't handle, an actual NFL defense with a pass rush. I see no way that they could get around that. They really don't have any above average players, almost on the entire offense, but their skill position players are really weak.
Yeah. Incredibly so.
All right, so who'd they add? So we talked about John Brown. They added Cole Beasley also. Who's an okay third receiver?
Cole Beasley was made to be on the Cowboys, I feel like. He's going to go somewhere else and be completely disappeared.
Yeah, so it's not ideal. You mentioned the running back situation. The O-line is, I'd say, average. Mitch Morse, they signed as a... the center from the Chiefs, and they also signed Quentin Spain. So they from the Titans. So they got two pretty solid inside players. They have Ty Nshicki. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Yeah, is he playing? Cody Ford's not starting for them.
I thought they were both starting. Did they trade? I thought they were going to trade. I don't know. And their left tackle is Leon Duggins. I'd say it's a league average offensive line, but with higher upside. They also might struggle early in the year because it's such a new mix of people. I think even a bad offensive line returning the same five guys has an advantage in the first few weeks over a line break-in and three new players.
Yeah. I mean, but this team is going to be carried, to the extent they're going to be carried anywhere, they're going to be carried by their defense.
Yeah, so they have a pretty elite secondary, maybe the best grouping of safeties with Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer.
Yeah.
A solid cornerback crew with Tre'Davious White, Levi Wallace, and Taron Johnson. It is a really good secondary. It could end up being the best secondary in the league. I'd say they have an above-average pass rush. Jerry Hughes is the star there. But let me read you. So they had three top 100 guys last year, of course, all on the defense. Jerry Hughes, Micah Hyde, who we mentioned, a safety. Poyer's probably just about a top 100 guy, too. So both their safeties are elite. Of course, nobody on the offense. But number 68 on Pro Football Focus, a guy named Lorenzo Alexander. Can I take you through his career saga? It is wild.
Lorenzo Alexander.
Yeah, so he's a month older than you. He's 36 years old, Lorenzo Alexander.
Okay.
The Panthers, in 2005...
And he's still a starting linebacker in the NFL. That's pretty good.
Yeah, 2005...
I haven't been a starting linebacker in the NFL for years at this point.
Yes, for years. Well, 2005, undrafted free agent. Same draft, other linebacker in that draft, Sean Merriman. He's been retired for 7 years. He had a full career.
Yeah.
You guys drafted, I think, Troy Williamson in the first round in that draft.
Yeah.
So he's been gone for even longer. Okay. So he makes the team as a practice squatter in 2005. That's it. 2006, he tries to make the team. He doesn't make it. He gets waived. The Ravens sign him for 5 days and cut him. 2006, still, the Redskins sign him, and they put him on the practice squad. They have him playing defensive line, inside linebacker, outside linebacker, and tight end. They're trying to convert him to tight end, okay? So he's on the practice squad all year. He makes the team under Joe Gibbs in 2007, doesn't play much, and then 2008 makes it. Both these as an inside linebacker, not a tight end or anything like that, under Jim Zorn. He's had a lot of funny coaches. Okay, plays a little bit as a backup in 2009. Starts to get a reputation as a good special teams player. 2010, Zorn gets fired. Mike Shanahan becomes the coach. Jim Haslett makes him an outside linebacker. They convert him to an outside linebacker. Okay? He starts in 2010, loses his starting job in 2011. Shanahan brings him back and makes him an inside linebacker. He makes the Pro Bowl on special teams. He's still only been a starter for 1 year in the NFL. They offer him a pretty nice deal. He's basically talks to his agent, is going to accept it. He comes back and they say, just kidding. They cut the deal from like $8 million to $1 million. So he says, no way, and he goes to sign with the Arizona Cardinals. You still following?
Riveting.
It's 2013. Okay? So he signs with the Cardinals. Immediately tears his ACL. You figure, oh, this guy's like his career's over. The odds of him ever playing again are probably pretty slim. He's an aging backup linebacker, just tore his ACL. They move him back to inside linebacker. He loses the starting job, becomes a backup. 2015, goes to camp with the Cardinals again, doesn't make the team. Jack Del Rio and the Raiders, they sign him, they make him a backup. Okay? Again, 1 year. Now he is 11 years into the NFL. He's been a starter one time. He has an injury history. I'd say like 1% of those guys even make a 12th year. The Bills sign him, and he gets 12 and a half sacks and makes the Pro Bowl. The 2017, he plays well. And last year, he was better, not as good as 2016, but better than 2017. And again, one of Pro Football Focus's best 70 players in the NFL. This is a 15th year now. 15th year linebacker. He's only started for a few of those years. One of the most unlikely careers in the history of the NFL.
I mean, congratulations to him. It's impressive.
Yeah, that's really wild. Lorenzo Alexander. Nobody had heard of him until 2016. And there's really no precedent for
But
like
linebacker is the position where you'll have guys who I think emerge the latest.
Yes.
It's not uncommon. Or you have guys like a Samuel. You have guys who even they might be a starter for a dozen years, but they don't all of a sudden get Pro Bowl recognition until they're in their mid-30s.
Right.
I feel like the peak of your career is the latest for either linebackers or quarterbacks.
Outside quarterbacks, I'll take.
And running backs are obviously the complete opposite.
Yeah, the opposite. I'll go with quarterbacks. I'd say centers age pretty decently. But I'm with you. I don't think that's crazy. I just think, like, this team could be much worse this coming year. The offense is so underwhelming to me. Is there anything you like about this team? Is there any reason to watch on Sunday, other than like to see what Josh Allen's up to? See him, you know, run like a maniac, throw a few bombs, throw a weird interception.
If I can be honest, and with all due respect to your team, there hasn't been a reason to watch an AFC East team other than the Patriots for 20 years.
Oh, sure. I would, you know, I can't argue that.
Yeah.
I also like that their third string quarterback is just the new Josh Allen, Tyree Jackson, who was the University of Buffalo quarterback, who is has a better, they say, a better arm than Josh Allen, but is less accurate. They were saying that before last year. Everyone said, like, oh, he's the new Josh Allen. And then they thought maybe, like, he'd have a big year and he'd actually be a first-round pick. He ended up, I believe, not getting drafted and because he was so inaccurate. But they're like, oh, he's literally a clone of Josh Allen, and now he's the third string. Matt Barkley somehow reinvented his career and is the backup.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
I think it would be funny. I would love to see Tyree Jackson play this year. I do think that would be entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, they just got rid of their Jackson last year, so.
So John Brown we discussed, Cole Beasley, the other starting receiver, Zay Jones, probably one of the worst players in the NFL. He sucks.
Yeah.
You
see him on the waiver wire when you're looking for a wide receiver in fantasy.
Yeah, he's always near the waiver wire. Yeah. I don't know how they... give him the average, like, 7.8 points, but then he gives you zero.
Yes.
And you're like, wait, and you have to check, like, did he play?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why did he have no targets? That doesn't make any sense. But something good did happen to their receiving core last year. Robert Foster, if you remember the last couple weeks of the year, had 100-yard games. So he may end up, I don't even think on the depth chart he's listed as a starter, but he may end up being their best receiver. The other interesting receiver they signed is Andre Roberts, who was a Pro Bowl returner for the Jets last year. The Jets did, I think, what was a smart thing. They knew they weren't going to contend. There's no reason to spend money on special teams. They had by far the number one special teams in the NFL last year. The Pro Bowl kicker, they let go, and they signed a kicker who ended up retiring last week, and they literally don't have a kicker right now. And they're talking about Blair Walsh. And the returner, they don't really have one either, but I just think that's a system thing, right? Unless you're Devin Hester, unless you're Cordarrelle Patterson, usually it's the same special teams coaches that get, the same. When the Jets had Mike Westhoff, they had, I think, 11 straight years of a kick return for a touchdown with, like, 10 different returners. Andre Roberts, who was never a Pro Bowler in his whole career, becomes one at, like, age 50. I wouldn't re-sign him. So congratulations to the Bills on that. The front seven, we mentioned Jerry Hughes and Lorenzo Alexander, but they have Tremaine Edmonds, Trent Murphy, Jordan Phillips, Starlo Tulule. It's really stacked. They really don't have Matt Milano, I guess, is a weakness if there is any. They really don't have a serious weakness in the front 11. Do you know who their defensive coordinator is?
For the Buffalo Bills?
Yeah.
No.
Leslie Frazier, your old friend.
Oh, okay. Congrats.
Brian Daboll, who's been on every team in the AFC East except the good one. Actually, maybe he has been on the Patriots. I'm not sure. But he's certainly been the coordinator or QB coach for the Jets and the Dolphins. Also is the Bills OC. Sean McDermott. So, huge first year. Major bounce back last year. Traditionally, a coach who has a good first year and then a bad second and third year does get fired. But I don't feel like McDermott, unless they're like they have the number one draft pick, I don't feel like McDermott's in jeopardy. Do you think McDermott is in jeopardy?
I mean, am I impressed with him as a coach? No. Does that mean the Buffalo Bills are going to fire him? What expectations can they have, right? Like, if they go 6-10, are they going to say, well, we have to fire our coach?
Yeah, no, they had a 6-10 team. I agree. By the way, if you were wondering at home and you weren't, the Patriots, Dable was on the Patriots for many years. Also, he has a long stint on all four AFC East teams. The Dable is only 44. He's been in the NFL for like 50 years. I feel like if he had hair, he'd be a coach, but he's like a fat bald guy, and he's never been a head coach.
Yeah, I mean, there's been fat bald guys before.
I know it's tougher. I do think it helps if you're better looking.
Yeah, I wouldn't classify the 32 NFL head coaches as a particularly attractive bunch.
No, but I think.
And by the way, and we're at the peak of attractiveness all time because of McVay and some of the other young guys, Kingsbury, some of these other guys who just.
Yeah, but Andy Reid, I feel like, loses some points every year. You know. Adam Gase is a really weird looking guy.
Yeah.
LaFleur is good looking. The Packers' new coach is good looking.
Yeah, not bad. Tomlin looks like Omar Epps, obviously, so that's not bad.
Do you think LaFleur pees his pants before he has to speak to Aaron Rodgers? Like, there's no way that's a normal relationship. Like, Rodgers has made it clear he is like an NBA style coach killer. Yeah. Every question at every press conference.
I don't know if you can call him a coach killer because it took him a long time to kill McCarthy.
I know, but I think that's like his thing now. Like, yeah. I am a coach.
Just the Packers having a coach whose first name isn't Mike is going to be very confusing to me.
Yeah, it's been I think the entire century, right?
Yeah. Well, no, they had Ray. They had the 1 year of Ray Rhodes.
Ray Sherman.
Or
Ray Rhodes or Ray Sherman? Ray Sherman was the Eagles. Ray Rhodes was the
I thought they had that 1 year between between Holmgren and Sherman. Didn't they?
I don't remember.
He went 8-8 for them, and then he got fired. He was from the Eagles, but he had 1 year with the Packers. I thought like 96, 97, something like that.
Yeah, well, they had Mike Sherman, obviously. But yeah, Ray Rhodes, you're right. 8-8, 1999. So yes, yeah. They've only had, other than the Philbin interim last year,
they've only had Mike's since 1992. Since basically we became fans of the NFL.
Yes.
They have not had a coach
I've been a fan
not named Mike,
yes.
Except for the 1 year of Ray Rhodes where they went 8-8, and now LaFleur.
And Vince Lombardi's real name, Mike. People don't know that.
You've actually got me to click on his name to see.
No, it's not. Thomas. It's not. But yeah, well. Forrest Gregg, their other famous coach, Forrest Gregg's first name was Elvis, not Forrest.
Yeah.
Forrest was not a nickname. It was his middle name.
Yeah.
The more you know. Do.
Yeah.
Do you want to do the Bills schedule?
Yeah. Who's doing it? Me or you?
You do it.
Okay. But does you do it mean me asking you or you asking me?
I think you do it means you ask yourself.
Oh, so you just sit and twiddle your thumbs?
No, I'll ask you. I just thought I was calling up the schedule. Okay, yeah. So the Bills have, you know, I like the weird schedule quirks. Yeah. How about this? From now till November 10th, the Bills, well, not now because they have to play the preseason games, but from next week until November 10th, the Bills leave the New York area, and I don't really think Buffalo's in the New York area, so technically they don't even go there, but they leave the New York area one time between now and November 10th because they open at the Jets and then at the Giants.
Well, okay, so in other, I think
and then
what you're
five of
say
their next
is that
seven.
The only NFL team that plays in New York plays each of their first two games on the road at New York, which means at New Jersey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So the next 7 weeks, one road game, one bye, five home games.
But they only have one game between now and November 10th that is not either in New York or officially a home game for New York.
Yes, and because the East plays the East this year, their road trips, if you're looking for frequent flyer miles, Tennessee, not so bad. Cleveland, not bad. Miami, not bad. Dallas, by far the worst. Pittsburgh, not bad at all. New England, not bad at all. I mean, they do not travel.
Yeah. Not a lot of miles for those Bills.
They don't travel west of Cleveland more than once
now,
a year.
So if you're like a Bill scrub and you're just on the team to like, you know, get miles, it's not ideal.
Well, I don't think the players get their own miles because they're not flying. They're
but
flying
I, when I travel
private.
For business, well, I guess if they're flying on a charter
they're flying
flight,
private.
Yeah, like, yeah, I guess
they're
true.
Not on flying on Delta and JetBlue.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but in life, the best case scenario is when someone else is paying for your flight or hotel, but you get the benefit of the points.
Yeah, that is good, but I don't think that's the case for Josh Allen and Zay Jones.
Yeah, I'm sure that I don't know. How much is Zay Jones making?
I mean, I think it was a high enough draft pick, probably $1 million.
No. Oh, really? Oh, okay, all right, he's doing it.
All right, so let's do it. Jets and Giants, their first 2 weeks.
By the way, I like how the Bills game against the Patriots in week 16 doesn't even have a time. The time is TBD.
Oh, I'll tell you why. I think that they did a smart thing this year with the Saturday games, the Week 16 Saturday game.
No, but that's a Sunday game.
No, I think it's not. I'm going to explain. What they did was...
Oh, they can shift them?
They last couple years, they had like 2 4:30s 1 year, which was insane to have dueling games, or 1 4:30 and 8 o'clock game. But because you have to decide the Saturday games beforehand, they weren't always good games. And then you were stuck. It's fine to be stuck with a bad game in Week 3, but it's weird to be stuck with a game that literally doesn't matter in Week 16, right? Then only the fantasy and the gambling people are even paying attention.
Yeah.
So what they did was they designated like 6 different games that can be Saturday, but if not, will be Sunday. So that's why it's TBD. It's actually a smart move. So they're sort of they're stacking the deck so they'll have meaningful games on Saturday. Good job by the NFL. It's been Akiva the schedule expert. All right, at Jets, Week 1. Is this a loser leaves town match?
I mean, the Jets looked so great in Week 1 last year in Detroit, right?
Yes. The Jets, are the best Week 1 team. Yeah, the Jets are the best Week 1 team in the NFL.
Yeah.
They win every year on Week 1. And the Mets. The Jets and the Mets.
I mean, I suppose that, and by the way, I see they play the Jets Week 1 and Week 17, and then they go a long 15 weeks in between without seeing them. So
yes.
I guess they'll split with the Jets, so I'll give the Jets a win in Week 1.
Okay. So at the Giants, I mean, they could be coming home 2-0. This is a very fortuitous early season schedule. It gets really rough.
Now, if you're a real New Yorker, you have to root for the Bills against the Jets and the Giants.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I'm a New Jerseyite. I don't even know how to say it. But
I asked Eric, who the host of this podcast, when I was in New York, if he was in New York, and he said, "Yeah." I'm like, "Oh, great!" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm in with my wife at Cornell. She's doing her doctorate or whatever." I'm like, "No, you're not in New York if you're at Cornell. Sorry."
Yeah. All right. I'm going to say the Bills are going to beat the Giants in Week 2, even though I think we had the Giants beating the Bills in Week 2 also. But By the way, your former co-host Ari Gold, who's not even like a Homer Giants fan, he says the absolute worst case scenario for the Giants this year is 8-8.
Homer Giants fan?
I'm saying he's not a Homer Giants fan. Yeah. So what is he smoking?
Why does he like the Giants? I'm not sure.
I don't know. Now, I sort of, every single year in my wins pool, every single year I pick the Giants. And every year they suck. Because every year in my head I'm like, well, they're not going to go worse than 8-8, 9-7, right?
They might not even go in your pool this year because only 30 teams get picked.
Yeah. Well, not if we have Adam Gleisch or Ari Gold in that pool.
Yeah. You should have Gleisch. Give him the first pick and just let him go buck wild on the Giants.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have 1-1. You have them beating the Giants.
Yes, I do.
All right, so now they come home for the Bengals.
I guess that's a win also.
And then they come home for the Patriots. If you give them a win here, then I'll be a little surprised.
Yeah, no, they're not beating the Patriots. 2-2.
2-2, and they go to Tennessee.
2-3.
All right, they have early bye, then they host Miami, Philly.
Well, they're
taking
off for the Jewish holidays.
Yes, they're taking off for Sukkot. And then they have Miami, Philly, and Washington at home.
I'm going to give them like 1.27 wins in this
Yeah, I understand. It's tough.
Yeah. So I'll say, you know what? I'm going to give them a tie. They're going to tie with the Dolphins. They're going to lose to the Eagles, and they're going to beat Washington.
Oh, I love it. Okay.
So they're 3-4-1.
Can you imagine if you then you're a witch if you get this right.
If the Bills and Dolphins tie, because a Bills Dolphins game, there's not going to be a lot of offense. So if that game goes to overtime, mm-hmm. it's ending in a tie.
It will be hard in a 10-minute overtimes. It's very hard to score if you have a bad offense.
So
they're
3-4-1.
Yeah, 3-4-1, and then they go to Cleveland and Miami.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Miami obviously needs revenge after that tie. So, by the way, as a rule, I think the Miami-Buffalo game in Buffalo should always be the end of the year. Because I love to see those Dolphins have to play in the snow.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. You want to see a bad quarterback in the snow. Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to say that
I want to see Fitzpatrick's beard with snow.
They're going to lose both of these games. So they're 3-6-1.
Okay, so the season's over. Then they host Denver. It's a really soft. I mean, you have two tough games at home, the Eagles and the Patriots.
Yeah, this is an easy schedule. The Bills
it's
have an
so
easy,
easy. It gets a little harder in December. There's a,
all right, they're going to beat Denver. They're 4-6-1.
At Dallas on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. You know what? They're going to beat the Cowboys in Dallas.
Oh, that would be a delight. Yeah. Ruin some Cowboys fans' Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
The weird thing about that 4:30 game, I don't know when you eat on Thanksgiving, but I feel like everyone's already eaten by the time that game starts. Like, you're eating during the Lions game.
No. Nobody's starting eating at noon.
Yeah, people start eating at, like, 3 o'clock.
No, that's crazy. Because early in the day on Thanksgiving, you go out. You go to a parade or you go – you don't get home until, like, noon or 1 o'clock, and then you start preparing the meal. You're eating at, like, 5 o'clock.
Okay. All right, so that but you have them so it's 5-6-1. So the season is not over.
Yeah.
They host the Ravens. The schedule is tough now.
Yeah. Lamar Jackson will and Josh Allen I think will combine for 200 yards rushing in this game. But
we should put that in our sort of football questionnaire we have to do.
Yeah.
Who'll have more rushing yards in the December 8th Ravens Bills game? Lamar Jackson or Josh?
Oh, we got to put together one of those things, so that's annoying.
Yeah, I'll do it. Then it gets really rough. So you have them losing to the Ravens.
5-7-1.
5-7-1. Then they go to Pittsburgh and New England.
Yeah. 5-8 and 5-9-1.
And then you have them beating the Jets. 6-9-1. Not such a nice season.
6-9-1. You know what? A dramatic improvement of half a game over last season.
No, for sure. Yeah. I think McDermott says.
Is that enough to get him to keep his job?
I think so. I think he keeps his job at 6-9-1.
Yeah.
They have a guy named Connor McDermott. Is that his son? Do you just get to put your son on the team if you're...
No. What you do when you're a coach is you make your son a position coach.
Yeah. Well, no. You make him a quality control guy.
Yeah.
You should do what a friend from high school I had, his dad did with... He was a New York City politician. And, like, there's nepotism laws. So you can't give your son a job. So you call up, like, the other, like, assembly person or whatever.
It's like a trade.
And you say, like, hey, do you have
I
any
hire
relatives?
Your son, you hire my son.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a son swapping.
A son swap.
Yeah.
Anyway, he is Connor McDermott.
By the way, speaking of son swaps, when is that Matt Damon movie coming out about the Yankees bullpen guys?
90% of the movies that go on like Deadline.com, hey, they're making that movie, never gets made. They're just buying the rights to it.
I mean, that we would obviously see that movie the first weekend, so I don't know what they're waiting for.
It would also be really bad. We would definitely see it and do a podcast about it, but I don't think anyone would care. So is Connor McDermott related to Sean McDermott? I will say his brother... is your long snapper, Kevin McDermott, for the Vikings. So are they related, yes or no?
Yeah, they have to be.
Nope, no relation, even though it's spelled the exact same Wells. M, small c, big D, Hermit.
That's surprising.
That is surprising. He's 6'8", 305, so don't try and beat him up. It will not work. How many minutes are we
at? How many NFL players could you beat up?
Me personally,
okay.
I think
let me revise. Let me revise.
Oh, I've got a great question for you.
You and me combined against an NFL player. Is there a single NFL player that we could beat in a fight? Combined?
Can I tell you a fun question in the census that's similar in the RENAP census? The question is: could, if you were cloned, and so it's just two of you. Pretend it's two Chesters, equal strength, equal everything. Could you and your clone beat up Robin Akiva? That's a good question for the census, right?
You're
going to say yes, but the question isn't could you. I mean, the question for you is could you, but the question for us is what percentage are going to say yes.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. Probably 80% will say yes. anyway.
I mean, with all due respect to you and Rob, neither one of you is too physically imposing.
I don't think either of us have been in a fight in a while, other than like maybe a Twitter fight.
Well, I haven't been in a fight either, but yeah.
We don't even get in Twitter fights. We're such wimps. okay, wait. So listen to this. It's a great question. Not to be sexist. But there was a lot of discussion of like who could the U.S.
Well, the way all non-sexist questions begin, of course.
Yes, that's how they've been. Like, could the U.S. women's national team, who could they beat in terms of men or whatever? I'm not here to discuss that. I'm here to discuss the WNBA. So, like, a big three team, like Gilbert Arenas and Royce White and all those guys, obviously they would beat a WNBA team, you know, by 50 points. I don't think anyone's going to argue that.
Here's my question.
No. It would be a big five team. I'm just saying, like, guys who are no longer in the NBA who are retired.
Yeah,
maybe
who have been in the NBA
old,
in the last couple
Paul
years.
Paul Pierce,
yes,
whatever. People have been in the NBA in the last decade.
Yeah.
At what age would a team of NBA Hall of Famers no longer be able to beat a W? I don't. Now I'm wondering why I asked this question. But it would no longer be able to. Oh, such a good question also. and it's great because I'm sure some women were getting mad at me, so that worked well. All right, that was perfect.